Right now, I'm very happy to welcome back to our program Charles Kernighan, Director of the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights. He has been at the forefront of holding multinational companies here in the United States and everywhere accountable for their role in running sweatshops and other production factories under dangerous and unhealthy conditions. And Charles, thanks so much for making time to come on our program tonight.
Well, thank you.
Before we get into the particulars of the tragic loss of life in Bangladesh and the more systemic problems that you're confronting, tell our listeners about your group, the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights.
Well, we're a relatively small group, but we have good contacts on the ground in China and in Bangladesh and Central America. Jordan, we've got contacts in India, so we've got a nice network of very dedicated people. We're based in Pittsburgh, and we've been doing this work for 25 years, or more than that, actually, for just exposing sweatshop production and starvation wages and lack of rights. This is what we do.
Well, maybe we can get started here by summarizing what we know about what occurred in Bangladesh with the collapse of an illegally constructed 8-story building housing 5 garment factories, anywhere from 380 to 400 to 1,000 people have apparently died in this tragic incident. And this followed, of course, fires in Bangladeshi factories. One in particular that occurred in November 2012 that killed some 117 workers. There were discussions about how factory doors were locked and people were trapped inside. And really, and you can tell us better than I can possibly summarize, that incidents like this occur in Bangladesh and all over the developing world, where many U.S.-based corporations have their garments or other products made in these factories with horrendous working conditions for slave wages.
Well, this is the name of the game that these garment people play. In this factory called Rana Plaza, it was had a permit for 5 stories. This is in Dhaka, on the outskirts of Savar. And this building had a permit for 5 stories, but they built 3 additional stories, which were completely illegal, and it was shoddy work. And we don't even know how many workers really worked in the factory. It could be even 4,000, could be 3,000. All we know is that right now, in this factory collapse in Bangladesh, 400 workers are dead. 2,437 workers have been accounted for. Of that, 650 are seriously injured and hospitalized. Many have amputees. The police are still saying that 1,000 workers are unaccounted for or missing. So the death toll could soar. I mean, we could be talking about 1,000 people dead or even above that. And this really is the worst manufacturing disaster in the history of the garment industry. So this is just brutal. And these young people, 80% of them young women, 18, 19, maybe 20, 25, they work so hard. I mean, they constantly are working. They'll work 13 and a half, 14 and a half hours a day. They'll do this for 6 days, 6 and 7 days, mostly 7 days, and they get 2 days off a month. So you're talking about young women who are in the factory 90 to 100 hours a week. That's standard. It's a hell of life. And their wages are pitiful. They get helpers, the younger people get 12 cents an hour. So-called junior sewers, they get 22 cents an hour. Senior workers get 26 cents an hour. You're talking about the lowest wages in the world. So here you've got a death trap, which was illegally built, you have five garment factories inside this building, and when the workers saw the cracks on the walls of the building, this was on Tuesday of April 23rd, when they saw this, the cracks in the, literally cracks in the walls of the factory, they refused to go to work. They came back on the following day, Wednesday, April 24th, and the, you know, the workers were sort of milling around outside to see what was going to happen. And the bosses came over and said to them, well, you know, if you don't go to work, you're not going to get paid for the entire month of April. And, of course, these workers are so poor, they live from hand to mouth. They can't give up a month's wages. And on top of that, there were gang members there with sticks and clubs that were ready to beat the young women to smithereens if they didn't go into the factory. So they were forced to go into the factory 1 hour later. They went in on Wednesday, April 24th. At 8 o'clock in the morning, 1 hour later, at 9 o'clock, the building imploded and pancaked down. And like I said, there's no way there's no way to condone this. This is just vicious, cruel. They treat these workers like they're slaves. And the garment owners, all they want is the cheapest garment possible. So for them, you know, Bangladesh is a bonanza.
Charles Kernighan is our guest, director of the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights. Charles, I'm certain there's a lot of culpability to go around in this horrendous incident and loss of life in Bangladesh. But from your perspective, maybe you could discuss a bit about the culpability of the building owner, who we hear is under arrest, the factory managers, the Bangladeshi government, and the multinational corporations that have their clothing produced in factories like this.
Sure. This is, you know, you mentioned earlier the Tazreen factory fire on November 24th of 2012. This was a case where workers were actually locked in, physically locked inside when the fire burst in the factory. And that night, 112 workers were burnt to death. And many leapt out of the windows, broke their legs just to save their lives. The owner of that factory, Delwar Hussein, is still walking around scot-free. So this guy just killed 112 people, tortured them, essentially, murdered them, and he's still walking around scot-free. So what happened was this tragedy was so enormous, this Rana Plaza, the fact that there could have been, you know, there could have been 4,000 workers in that factory. And the fact that it just imploded and pancaked and just crushed everyone, where, you know, the death toll, again, it could go as high as 1,000 or more. This finally has gotten through to the Bangladesh government that your corruption and your business as usual, it can't go on. So this is actually the first time that there has been any arrests of these crooked, miserable maniacs that run these garment factories. All they want to do is suck the blood out of these young girls. So we know that there's four owners of the factory that was in the Rana Plaza where the women were killed. Those factory owners have been apprehended. The owner of the Rana Plaza building, he's been arrested. This is the first time this stuff has ever happened. Now, it's very possible, you know, that they may just give them a little slap on the wrist and keep them for 30 days and then let them loose because of bribes and other things. Because, you know, countries like Bangladesh are very, very corrupt. When it comes to the big retailers, they could care less. It means absolutely nothing to them. All they like is the low wages and the fact that the workers will be forced to work 7 days a week. That's what they salivate on. So they're not taking much of a hit. Unless the American people and, you know, European people and Canadians, we know a lot of labels, well, there's been several U.S. labels. One of them is Cato, which is a woman's clothing company. We believe the Children's Place was also involved. Joe Fresh label is in Canada. Primark is in the United Kingdom, in the U.K. Papaya Denim is in the U.K., a European project that's from Italy, Viela is from Spain. I mean, so we're only now getting our hands on hundreds of labels from all over the world. And, the workers, the manufacturers come here, to come to Bangladesh because of the long hours, the lack of rights. There are no, there is not one single factory in Bangladesh that has a collective contract and a functioning union. There are 5,000 factories. There are anywhere from 3.5 million to 4 million workers. And all of those workers, every one of them is stripped of their rights. They have absolutely no rights. One of our guys was just telling us that there is no, workers have no voice, period. He was telling us this morning, the garment workers, the garment workers decide, the garment owners decide what the law is, and the workers have no rights whatsoever.
Charles, you have worked tirelessly to hold accountable the multinational corporations that produce clothing and other products abroad in the sweatshops, places like Bangladesh. What is it that you would have these companies do in terms of ensuring that these workplaces are both safe and conditions and wages are humane and fair? Obviously, these companies keep their distance from these factories and those folks who own them. But what would you have them do? What new responsibilities would you place on these multinational companies' shoulders to ensure that things made for them are produced in a fair and equitable way?
Well, we were just hearing something from Canada, from this Joe Fresh label. And the woman who was speaking for the label were saying that they don't have any, they have no responsibilities whatsoever. I mean, in other words, they can't do anything that the government doesn't want. We can't push the government to do things. It's not legal for us to try to implement standards and all. So what you have is a bunch of phonies from beginning to end. I mean, they have these pathetic corporate codes of conduct, which are a complete whitewash. They keep the workers, denying the workers' rights, denying workers the right to have a union and to organize and to have a decent working conditions. They just strip the workers. They pay them the miserable wages. They put them in these death traps, and then they think they can walk away. This really needs the involvement of our government, the U.S. government, the Canadian government, the government of the European Union. We have to actually put down some laws that these workers, in Bangladesh have to have safe conditions. They have to have the right to organize a union so that they don't get killed, and that they have the right to try to bargain collectively so they can get a few more pennies so that they can feed their families. The workers live in miserable hovels. You couldn't even imagine. You wouldn't put a dog in one of those places. You wouldn't. I mean, it's criminal. And for all these years, it's gone on in broad daylight, where kids are being destroyed. We were just recently talking with a young girl who was 15 years of age, and she worked 106 hours a week making shirts for the U.S. Polo Association. So this thing has to be turned around completely. And frankly, our government, the U.S. government, hasn't done enough. We have not put pressure on Bangladesh. And Europe is even worse. Europe gives all duty-free access to Bangladesh. So all of the garments made in Bangladesh can come to the European Union duty-free. So there's, in other words, you're handing over the whole garment industry. You're handing it over to the garment owners, who are criminals, and they decide what the law is. Workers don't have any voice, period. And workers have to pay the ultimate price with their lives. So I think we're at a crossroads right now where we better get our U.S. government involved and the European Union involved and the Canadians involved. I think that this is a time when we really make some challenges. And central to it is that workers have to have health and safety, and they have to have the right to organize.
I've heard that there's a very horrendous calculus going on, that in Bangladesh, when a worker dies, there's only $1,300 equivalent paid to the family in compensation. And then many of the factory owners and people invested in this industry do the calculations that it's cheaper to pay $1,300 for every life lost than it is for them to change and improve the working conditions of these factories that they operate. Is there some truth in that?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's not, and some of the workers who have been killed, they're just paid $242 for their life. Their life is worth $242. And it's only when you get up into the bigger factories and maybe the higher-end labels that they're willing to consider that $1,300 is the worth of a young woman who is working in these factories. It's I think that the global economy is spiraling downward so quickly that I don't know. It's the recession, I think, in the United States has made it more difficult for people to be engaged in this stuff. They're like, they're up against the wall. They're out of work. They're working part time. They can't make ends meet. They're falling behind. They're losing their skills. They're not getting hired. I think it's a bad time in the United States economically, and that tends to stop the passion. Like when back in the 90s, when President Clinton was adding 2.2 million jobs to our economy, people were more open and they were more ready to stand up and fight for workers across the developing world because they themselves were doing okay. They were, you know, their wages were okay. There were plenty of jobs. When you're in a recession like this, people just pull back. So I don't think there's going to be a big push by the part of the American people, which is why I think we always have to come back to our governments, you know, the U.S. government, the Canadian government, the European Union. We have to, like, have some serious challenges to end this sweatshop production and the misery that these workers live in and the deaths and the murders. I wish it would come from the American people, but I don't sense it.
Charles Kernighan is our guest, director of the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights. We're discussing the tragic collapse and still unknown number of lives lost in the collapse of that factory building in Dhaka, Bangladesh, where five factories were there manufacturing clothes, many for international labels. Charles, I've read about this United Kingdom-based group, Ethical Trading Initiative, which is a way, I guess, for some of these major companies, these major clothing companies, to say they've invested in some kind of monitoring of these factories to ensure that they have safe working conditions. What, in your view, is operable right now in terms of strong and independent monitoring agencies to inspect these factories around the world to ensure they aren't sweatshops and death traps?
Well, unfortunately, we haven't seen much progress with the Ethical Trading Initiative. In fact, I would actually categorize it as largely phony. So what you have, for example, in Pakistan, there was that horrific fire in a garment factory in last year, 2012, and 265 workers were killed, and that was the worst disaster ever up until this disaster in Bangladesh. But an organization called SA8000, like one of these, you know, socially accountable monitoring groups, they had just monitored the factory and gave them a green go ahead. So these. You know, for-profit or whatever they are, monitoring groups, they can literally go into a factory. They can monitor it. They pick up their money, and, a few weeks later, the workers are burnt to death in Pakistan. So I think, again, I always come back to the workers have to be able to have some empowerment. Workers have to have some rights that are legal rights. They have the right to organize a union. They have the right to bargain collectively. They have the right to improve conditions, no child labor, no forced labor. The codes of conduct are baloney, and it's a dead end, and it's a smokescreen. Why do we need, you know, monitoring groups when the workers themselves know more than anything about how the factories operate and whether they're safe or they're not safe, what kind of wages they need to live so their families can exist? In other words, I've always seen monitoring from the very beginning to be phony as can be, because we actually started the first independent monitoring way back in the 1990s when we held GAP accountable in El Salvador, and we forced GAP to accept the Jesuit University in San Salvador to be the independent monitor. And these were people who had given their lives. You know, many Jesuits were killed in the war in Central America. So the first truly independent monitoring model was putting the Jesuits in El Salvador in charge of monitoring this GAP factory. And once the other companies saw this happening, they circled the wagons, J.C. Penney and others, and said, we'll never allow, you know, monitors like that. So the monitoring was quickly... truly independent monitoring was quickly destroyed, and all the phony balonies came out. And you know, frankly, if you look at the industry around the world in the developing country, these monitoring groups aren't doing any good whatsoever.
Charles, I've heard it said that this building collapse in Bangladesh, compared often to the Triangle New York City shirtwaist factory back in 1911, where mostly women, 146 of them killed, many of them having to jump to their deaths from a clothing factory and building right in downtown New York City, that as that was a turning point in the American labor movement, that this may be a similar turning point in Bangladesh and maybe for other sweatshops around the world. If that's true, do you place your faith in change in people on the ground in each country in terms of strong unions developing or being allowed to develop? Or are we looking at some other kind of international treaties, the International Labor Organization, or other institutions that can play a positive role here in changing the conditions in these factories?
Yeah, it's a difficult question. I mean, it's a huge question. The Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire in 1911 with 146 deaths, that mobilized the American people. We didn't have industrial relations before that. It was only after those women died and leapt from the top of the Ash Building in Greenwich Village, it was only then that we had an industrial policy. It was only then that the laws were implemented, that there'd be sprinkler systems and exit doors had to open outward. They couldn't be locked. And hearings after hearings were held, so that between 1911 and 1938, for example, there were no sweatshops in the United States. They were wiped out completely because they were governed by laws, by enforceable laws. And then on top of it, by the 50s, you had like 38% of the workers were organized in the United States. The bottom fell out when all of the products started to be shipped out. Frankly, things were very good right through like 1975, 1980 in terms of worker rights in the United States. Now that's being wiped out because we're being pitted against countries where the workers have no rights, and they'll pay us as little as 14 cents an hour. And I just don't know like how this is going to turn around. If the American people were more engaged, I mean, that would be very powerful, but I don't really sense it or see it. Our own government does not do very much. For example, You know, I can't think of anything that we've improved in Bangladesh through the U.S. government, or for that matter, Honduras or Guatemala, for that matter. In other words, we're tolerating, our government is tolerating sweatshops all over the world. And, of course, the stuff in China is even worse. I mean, it's like, I mean, there's obviously no political freedoms and no religious freedoms and no union freedoms. So we're dealing with really corrupt governments all over the world. And unfortunately, our own government, the U.S. government, doesn't stand up and push back as much as it would, as much as it would be very powerful if they did push back a little bit and demand some rights for these workers.
Well, Charles, thanks so much for being here tonight and all your very critical work in trying to hold these companies accountable here and abroad for the sweatshops they use to produce their goods. And leave our listeners, if you would, Charles, with the website for your group, the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights.
Yeah, it's www.glhr.org. And we have a lot of reports and a lot of pictures. We document this stuff very thoroughly, so if people want to go to the website, they can find out a lot.
That's glhr.org, right?
That's it.
All right. Charles, thanks so much for spending time with us tonight.
Hey, thank you.
Take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Charles Kernighan, Director of the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights, talking about the Bangladeshi factory collapse last week and tragic unfolding of the great number of lives lost there. The final number not known as yet, could be as high as 1,000.